let's get a bit more detail on some of today's big business stories. CNN's emerging markets editor of John Defterios. He's in Abu Dhabi and he joins me on the line right now. John, good talking to you. Thanks for being with us.
Nice to be back, Richard. Thanks.
We got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about. Let's talk about a story here in the Middle East. Oil falling today. Brent crude down a percent or so. Front page of the Financial Times this morning was all about Saudi Arabia, not quite flooding the market with oil, but pledging to sell more oil to its customers to keep the oil price lower. What's the story?
Well, it's interesting because Ali al-Naimi, the Saudi oil minister, was himself saying last week that he thought oil prices were too high, and that's when they were around $118, $119 a barrel for North Sea Brent. And then a week later, they signaled that they're producing close to 10 million barrels a day and have discussions with refiners. If there's additional orders, we're here to serve you. So it's fascinating, I think, that the signal came as the U.S. and other allies have done their sweeping for the mines in the Straits of Hormuz here to kind of double up to say, if you have any doubts at all whether there'll be enough oil to buffer the global market, we're here to serve. Now, you and I have talked about this in the past. Back in January, he signaled in an interview that we did with him in Saudi Arabia that they have up to 12.5 million barrels a day of capacity, probably production topping out 11.8 million barrels. So there's another 1.8 that Saudi Arabia could put onto the market if needed. He's trying to counter the fact that the sanctions have dug into Iran and its production's at a 22-year low right now. We're below 3 million barrels a day for Iran, Iraq passing them up in July for the first time in those 22 years. So Saudi Arabia sending a signal, a very political one, by the way. You can't get lost in the U.S. elections. They don't want gasoline prices or petrol prices going to $4 a barrel. They're right near there, so they want to kind of send a signal that there's no reason for prices to be this high. There's not a great security risk. There is additional oil if we need it. We'd rather have it closer to $100 a barrel than 110 where we are today.
John, let's look at some of the other stories you're covering on Global Exchange at the moment. And the missing Chinese minister has reappeared.
Yes, he has. And I find it fascinating that he did not, for the purposes of Hillary Clinton and others, because he might have been of ill health. And we never really got the final answer on that, Richard. And I talked to different sources over the weekend. One Chinese economist who talked to some of his sources within the Politburo that suggested that he might have had, for example, a minor heart attack. But it has never been clarified. And in fact, they're not suggesting what it was, but he showed up for a meeting with Leon Panetta, and his commerce minister, who made some comments for us on Global Exchange tonight, is suggesting that these tensions with Japan are just going to undermine trade between the second and third largest economies in the world. $358 billion a year in trade. They're disputing the East China Sea islands right now, and both are claiming ownership. They need to find resolution. That's what something that Leon Panetta, the defense secretary, the defense minister of the United States, was suggesting today. Look, cooler heads do need to prevail here. You can't have this kind of outbreak that actually starts to undermine trade when the global recovery is so fragile as it is today.
And just very quickly, put into context why everyone was so concerned about the disappearance of this guy, Xi Jinping. He's the vice president, but what does that mean in terms of the hierarchy or the pecking order in Beijing?
Well, phenomenal question, because we often forget it, because we cover it every day. He's going to be the supremo in 2013, to put it bluntly. He's going to go from vice president to president, and they're also transferring out their premier Wen Jiabao, and that replacement hasn't been named yet. So it only happens once every 10 years. It's a very orchestrated event. The reason we were so concerned this time around is because you had that big controversy in the southwestern corner of the country in Chongqing, a city of nearly 30 million people. And because they had that governor kicked out of the top ranks of the party, they wanted this to be a smooth transition. Then he disappeared for 12 days and then reappears for the meeting with the U.S. But they don't want any more major hurdles standing in the way between that and the once-in-a-decade transition. That's why it does matter.
Let's talk about Turkey now. I was at a conference this week discussing trade between the Middle East and Turkey, specifically the UAE and Turkey. It's absolutely booming over the past decade. In fact, the Turkish economy has been booming over the past few years. But that is slowing down, isn't it? And the Turkish government is taking evasive action.
Yeah, we had an interview with the Minister of Finance, Mr. Semsik, last night from Ankara, and he talked about the timing of the interview linked to the central bank's move to cut interest rates 1.5%. but just down to 10%. So they had those interest rates very high to try to slow down inflation, and they had a very big current account deficit. So they've gone from, you know, blazing growth of nearly 9% the last 2 years, 8.5% last year, down to 2.9% in the second quarter. That's enough to raise some eyebrows because this was an extremely promising market. They're getting hit on two flanks right now, Richard. They've got problems in Syria, which is costing them a lot of money in terms of refugees, but also that appearance that there's trouble in the financial capital as well as the capital, even though it hasn't materialized. You just have that perception that there's trouble in Turkey as a result of Syria. And the Eurozone, you know, 50% of their exports go into the European Union, and the Eurozone's underwater right now. So they're getting hit on both sides. The finance minister suggested that this quarter that we're in right now, the third quarter, could probably be the worst of it. They're hoping to get up to 4 or 5% next year. Now that things have stabilized and inflation in the current account, they have some leeway on interest rates, and they want something that's not as hot as they had in 2010, 2011, as you know. Hot money comes in, hot money goes out. They want to have it a bit more reasonable, a bit more stable growth. But, you know, the economy has trebled in 10 years in size. Now $775 billion economy, having trebled in 10 years.
I spent my summer holiday in Istanbul. I enjoyed it tremendously, and I see the strength of the Turkish economy. But tonight, with Manchester United playing Galatasaray in Istanbul, I wish nothing but ill on Turkey and all of its sporting heroes. Listen, John, finally, can't let you go without getting your thoughts on the US election race. And what a twist we've had in the past 48 hours with Mitt Romney and these videos that have been released. What do you make of it?
Well, it's a whole new world. Nothing's a private meeting anymore. You know that as a journalist, and so do I. So anything is kind of, in a sense, although it doesn't need to be on the record, if somebody records it and releases it, and again, these things don't happen by accident. But I found the strategy a bit wanting. He's trying to appeal to the far right of his party again, suggesting that this, you know, 47% is, you know, the people I represent, and these are the people that need to come off those, you know, payrolls of the government. That's a pretty risky strategy, and in fact, President Obama struck him on David Letterman right away, suggesting, you know, I represent 100% of America, not nearly half of it. So we need to come solutions for the entire country. This is a bit of a gamble by Mr. Romney, but he's hurting, and you and I had this conversation before. Just invite our viewers, look out for the swing states. And President Obama is polling very strongly there, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida. These are the states that make the difference because of our electoral college system where the big points are scored on these states. And that's why I think Mr. Romney is kind of reaching or grasping for straws here, taking a counter strategy, trying to suggest here that we need to shake up the system so he makes the differentiation between the two quite grand. You know the difference between the two candidates, but it hasn't played out just yet. Although, because of what's happening in the Middle East and what's happening in China and Japan, you know, you never know when those things rattle the cages of voters closer to the election.
Very quickly, looking, and I watched Obama on Letterman last night, and as ever, he was smooth and statesmanlike. But there is a suggestion that Romney's comments, particularly about the 47% of Americans who don't pay income tax, could actually be a winning ticket for him. Conservative commentators like Rush Limbaugh, for example, are almost kind of shouting from the sidelines going, go Mitt, this is what we wanted to hear. Could it actually play to his strength?
Well, that's the big difference here is that those states that I was talking to you about, particularly in the upper Midwest of America, kind of the Rust Belt, or the former Rust Belt at least, very large union membership. So they're not going to be probably persuaded to, you know, to cross over to that message, but it will mobilize the right to that party, and Mr. Limbaugh, as you were suggesting here. And can they mobilize the others in the party, and even those that are sitting on the fence, the moderate Republicans who have been going both ways during the elections? That's something we have to kind of wait and see. But I think Mr. Romney made a gamble here. You know, is it going to work? We'll kind of find out in the poll results in the next 5-6 days. I'm just very disappointed, you know, as an American, you can hear in the accent, that it gets so petty as we go through the final stretches here. We're not really talking about the big issues of China. We're not talking about the big issues of the Middle East. You know, we're not talking about relations of a transatlantic trade zone between Europe and the United States, but very petty discussions about, you know, the payrolls, and not even focusing on the rising cost of health care or the rising cost of education. But this is where the votes are won in the last, you know, 5 to 6 weeks of a race, unfortunately.
John, always good to get your views. Thanks indeed.
You take care.
CNN's John Defterios, their emerging markets editor, joining us on the line from Abu Dhabi.